This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 20th of December, 1953. The title of this lecture is Communication. This tape is 63 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions. Please note, this tape ends abruptly, as did the original master recording.
This is December the 20th, first lecture of the day. Today I want to give you some odds and ends of material which might make you a better auditor. First thing I want to go into is communication. Communication is a manifestation of cause and effect. Maybe some of you are still wondering why Q&A works, why things are what they are in this universe. Of course, Q&A processing is simply the basic mechanic of communication itself. So we don't have anything there to worry about. The question and the answer has gotten into the communication channel. Well, actually, in order to make a thing different, it's necessary to put a slightly different mood on the two different ends of the line. Well, people have violated the rules of communication and failed to duplicate so often that an individual is then bettered by simply running the two ends of the communication line. It is not the best process in the world, and yet it is a very demonstrative process and does get some results on an individual. Now, an individual who is suffering with a certain problem is quite often bettered by this. But this is one of these processes which gets an effect rather quickly, and sometimes it's up to an auditor to have a few of those around. You get somebody who's pulling a... You know, there are lots of pre-clears in the world, and some of them are very nice people, and some of them are people, and some of them are people. And these people who look at you and say, go on, do something, I dare you to, all the time saying, yes, yes, I'll do that. Go on, just try and do something. are actually in some kind of a fight dramatization, something like that. That's what's wrong with these people. They're out of communication, they can't receive an effect, and they can't change. They're resisting all effects, and it shows up immediately as a dare or a jeer. Well, they're the first to tell you immediately afterwards that nothing happened. You're going to save yourself an awful lot of trouble as an auditor if you put in your pocket a few things which blow up bombs in their heads. It's an awfully good thing for you to do. It's one of the best ways to change somebody's mind to assure that nothing can happen, is to forthrightly make something happen. Well, Q&A is such a process. Formula H, with its reach and withdraw, is another such a process. But an auditor who is using HC in practice came up to see me last night and told me what some of his problems were. And amongst these problems was one problem of getting into the case. It has sometimes taken him from 6 to 8 hours to get a case starting to roll. The case is just hung up there and hung up and hung up. And he wanted to know how I did this, how I got a case. Well, now, I've already told you much earlier and told the first unit what I do with a case is that quite routinely doesn't pop out of his head and begin to perform. I mean, what I do with that case, who is sitting there resisting all effects, resisting all effects, resisting all effects, wanting to see what I am going to do with him. I'm not going to do anything with him. All I'm going to do is ask him to go through these exercises and by gradient scales get him up to a point where he's presentable and can operate instead of slogging around on 2 feet. So what I've mentioned this before, as I said, what I do with such a case that I perceive is immediately going to impose a little bit of a problem is I give them a drill which permits me to evaluate for them right away. And having posed such a drill, then put that evaluation somewhat into their own hands. Here's the way that's done. You take an individual, you tell him to be 3 feet back of your head. What are you going to do to me now? There's anything you've done for me anyhow. I'm just here because my wife said I ought to be here. And so there's nothing wrong with my communication system and so forth. Wrong with me, wrong with me, wrong with me, wrong with me. Well, I don't brain him. That's his first impulse. Because this fellow's so bad off as to realize that if he's just sitting there in a body, totally enslaved by an economic and police system called the Mass Universe, if he's just sitting there and he doesn't think anything is wrong with him, oh boy, have you got a case on your hands. I mean, just that. See, that makes about 50% of the people walking down the street here quite a case, doesn't it? Well, here's what I do exactly. I generally process somebody in a fairly large room, and I haven't done too much ambulant processing as a demonstration, simply because when I do it in a room full of students, I just can't do this process. I make him go to one corner of the room, then go to another corner of the room, and then go to another corner of the room, and then go to the door. Make him do something with the door, like open it and close it. Make him go to another corner of the room. Make him go to another corner of the room. Each time on the basis that I want him to touch something. And I just make him move around. I say, now, what's one of the ways to go about this, and the easiest excuse you can have to do this, is just to run contact processing, step 7, not because the fellow's psycho, but because you're simply trying to get him into the works. If you confuse that step 7, it's because it says that's what you do with a psycho. Well, the reason it says psycho is that's the only process that works on everybody, including psychos. That's a little bit different than it being a step which is relegated entirely to the psychotic. Well, it had anything to do with the psychotic. The guy's crazy. Why tell him to go look up the local witch doctor or something, or the other psychiatrist in town? Anything. You haven't any business dealing around with the psychotic. Because this is a specialized piece of mess that belongs to the state, so forth. Anyway, besides, it'll take up an awful lot of your good time. Because they don't process rapidly. When we have this character walking around, then we just get him to walk around various parts of the room. And I don't say you do this just to a person just to be mean or something. This is a case you're having a little hard time getting into, you know. You're just getting a little bit difficulty in getting it rolling. Well, you just have him walk around and feel this and feel that. Now, you don't have to ask him what's real to you in the room. But it's usually best to do so, just to be on the safe side. You say, what's the realest thing you see? The fellow says, everything's real. You say, well, that's fine. Walk over and touch the doorknob. Okay, now turn around and walk over to the other side of the room and touch the wall. Now walk over and put that picture out of adjustment. Now put it back in adjustment. Now go over and sit down in that chair. And now go over to the other side of the room. Touch the wall there. And I will to keep this up for about 20 minutes. Sounds like a long time. It's not a long time. And you'll find out that his communication lag begins to drop out. It's interesting, isn't it? His communication lag starts to get better. All right, next thing I do is I tell him, now, all right, now you're standing there in that corner of the room. Now, send yourself to another corner of the room by deciding what corner of the room you're going to send yourself to, and then tell yourself to go. Well, he does, and he goes to another corner of the room. And he's there, well, you say, all right, now decide to go somewhere else in the room, and then send yourself there. And he does. Now, you remember the process I was giving you whereby I said you make him decide to pick up the ashtray and move it to a certain location, then not to move it till he decided where he's going to move it to. Well, that's in essence the same process, but handling the body. And so then you can get fancy if you want. You keep that up for another 20 minutes. Now, you get fancy on such a thing once in a while, just to vary the monotony as far as the preclear is concerned, not really for any other reason. And you'd say, all right, now decide to send yourself to a place in the room and then change your mind. Now send yourself, decide some other place. You know, you've got that. All right, now send yourself to the second place. And, decide to go someplace in the room. Decide that's the wrong place to go and decide on another place and go there. Well, this, of course, is working out the big maybes, the decisions. Because on anyone, the indecisional point is simply deciding to go one place and deciding he has to be one place and then going to another place. Which of the two places to go to is the biggest indecision you can hit on the track. So you just work that out in that way. But in the meantime, you're the person who's telling him to make up his own mind and decide to go. And there's the little slicker right there. He'll process after that. And his processing will work quite rapidly. Now, this case very well may have been sitting there saying, well, I'll do it and so forth. I don't think he can do anything for me. Well, he can do anything for me anyhow and so forth. And he says, yes, I've got the mock-up. Yes, I've got this. Yes, I've got that. Can't do anything for me. Well, it sure gets that out of his system. Because you just manually pushed him all over the room, you see. And by moving him, changing his position in space, permits you to evaluate for him. And then by running the other process, you permit him to give himself orders. Now, up to this time, he has been moving like an automaton. Something pushed a button and he went in that direction. Never occurred to him to make up his own mind to go in a direction and then go in that direction. He never thought he had this right. Now you would be surprised how many people this will work on. Any Thetan that's been swamped by a body has this problem. You know, he kind of wonders what did make up his mind. Well, this fellow really knows you made up his mind because you told him to. So therefore there's no doubt about the source of the initial response. So that gives that a certainty. And then there's no doubt that he told himself to go to that corner. Now, he can wonder why and get the deep significance of why he told himself to go to that corner and so forth if he wants to, but he still is sitting on top of a certainty, which is to say you told him to make up his mind. So he decides that he has made up his mind simply because you told him to. And in this wise, you will very often get a communication lag that is as much as 30 seconds down to 5 seconds. And that's quite a triumph, believe me. That's very fine. Now, I'll give you an example of that. I had a case that was hanging fire quite some time ago, and had been hanging fire for some time, and I couldn't quite understand, although this case apparently had a very fast communication reaction, apparently was doing all right in a number of ways. I was getting something which you, at this stage here and there, haven't got it quite yet that you have to get. Every 5 or 10 minutes, a communication change. You're not getting a communication change every 5 or 10 minutes. You're not processing the case. You're processing somebody that's processing a case, or you're doing something peculiar. Then the techniques aren't working. They will work if they are used to process the case. You see, but if they are being used by a preclear who doesn't know much about processing in order to process a ridge, why, they're not going to do much for the preclear. You see this? So what tells you that this is not happening is a communication change. If you don't get a communication change every 5 minutes, really, and certainly every 10 minutes on a case, and I mean a communication change, bad or good, a difference of perception, a difference of speed of talk. And if you don't keep nagging them for it, I don't know what you're doing. You're not auditing by SOPHC. You're just sitting there reading a book or or going over a drill or trying to memorize your lesson or something. You're not auditing. Because in the essence of auditing under present work and procedures is a continuous nag on, all right, now, you see any better? Are you there with any more certainty now? And so on. Now, this will respond on the pre-clear, who's bad off, as putting a doubt in his mind as to what he's doing if you phrase it wrongly, if you don't do it delicately and gently. But if it does, what do? You can just run some Q&A, you asking how things are, and him how things are answered. Something like that, it'll clear it right up. It's nothing to bog down over. So let's get that very securely right now. I've said it several times, and every time some PC comes to me and says during the auditing session, so on and so on and so on, I will say, well, what technique was used? And in so on, and they say, well, I went on for, we've been using now for two sessions now, almost 3 hours we've been using, so on and so on, and hasn't done me any good, and yet the auditor keeps on using it, and he does this and he does that. And when I get down to the final question, I should have asked this question. Has the auditor been checking you for communication changes? Because it's the one that finally settles the argument. No. In each case, no. If what you're doing isn't changing the perception of the preclear, it isn't resolving his case. Because the case of the preclear is a problem in communication. You could say it was a problem in an awful lot of things. But it's in essence a problem in communication. Communication is by far the most important part of the ARC triangle. For a couple of years, I never said what was the most important part of it, merely because I wanted to be darn sure what was the most important part of it. Guys ram around and scream at you and say, oh, that reality, that's what's important. And you look at me and say, will you please mechanically define reality? No, that's very easy. What's real is real is real. When I was a little girl, is a rose, is a rose, is a rose. The only thing you know about reality is communication and affinity, which in essence makes up an agreement, and we call that reality. Well, we better call it certainty. It means much more. It means a great deal more. We could call it knowingness. We could call a ARC triangle knowingness, communication, and affinity. Only that would be improper because knowingness stands above the whole triangle. Knowingness in terms of MEST is made up. Understandingness and so forth is made up of ARC. Any mathematics can be computed out on the basis of ARC. A mathematician made the unfortunate challenge one day in my office of saying that this is impossible and so forth and so forth and so forth. And I said, it's what? And he said, well, yes. He says, mathematics, he says, that's a science. That's a pure science. And I said, that wouldn't have anything to do with life then. No. I said, well, what uses mathematics? Oh. It's a pure science. I say, you mean nothing uses it? Well, of course, everything uses it. All right, what uses it? He finally, in kind of a beaten fashion, says, life. Yes, he says, but mathematics can exist in the absence of life. I said, I've never seen anything use it in the absence of life. And this is that axiom there. And by the way, on the introduction of that mathematical axiom in the logics, and so on, do you know that three of the roughest problems that the mathematicians had stacked up around these days cracked, and three mathematical prizes were awarded? The boy applied that logic to the solution of these problems. Now, you know, it's like the Heisenberg uncertainty quadramatics as the reason why bosses wear toupees, or I don't know, you know, something important. And it had been baffling everybody for a long time. But the human mind is a servo mechanism to every mathematics. Immediately resolved the problem when somebody says, well, the human mind probably can understand this, but of course the equation just goes along this way. And every one of your mathematical wizards takes this dodge. You see, the human mind can undoubtedly resolve a syllogism, but a syllogism does not resolve a problem. It's not good enough to resolve a problem. The human mind can probably understand this. Well, the fact of the matter is, the human mind is standing behind every mathematics with something like Boolean algebra, which is really too complex to be worked out on anything less than about 5 notebooks for one formula. Boolean algebra is wonderful stuff. It's what your telephone relay switchboards work on and so on. All it is yes is greater than no, no is greater than yes, yes greater than no, no greater than yes, and it all works out. And it performs a very fine answer in terms of averages. Well, the mind does that. That's evidently the way the mind works when it is sorted down to what it is actually doing with facts. And when you get into mechanical computation on the part of the mind. Of course, sitting right above that is just plain knowingness. We take ARC then, and we find out the component parts of ARC are mathematics. And they run this way. A mathematician is trying to find what symbols agree with what symbols. He's trying to find what symbols duplicate what symbols and which part of an area or what portion of a quantity are represented in another area or another portion of a quantity. That's communication. Just per se. As far as affinity is concerned, he wants to know what's like something else. And that's all there is to affinity. Well, what's like it and what isn't like it? So he's dealing with similars and dissimilars, and that in essence is affinity. Because you get two similars, they will not only have affinity for each other, if they're so entirely similar, they merge. And you get the Thetan with his experience in common with the body's experience, as a sympathy between the Thetan and the body. It's just solely a matter of similar experience. This can be monitored in terms of how much agreement there was on a bad or good experience. You get your consideration and you get your opinion interjected in there. But these three together, that's a very, very superficial rendition of this, by the way. Went over it one time and found out that after I'd written about 10,000 words on it, I was still writing, so I threw it in the files. It goes from too many directions to too many directions. Understanding, then, is an effort to combine A and R and C. And that is understanding. Now, an auditor who is neglecting C, or communication, you see, is going to be neglecting certainty, which is reality. Certainty and uncertainty make up reality. And he's going to be neglecting at the same time the A factor. If the case just stays at a constant C, constant communication, and it's going to stay at a constant A, it's going to stay at a constant level of certainty. If you want to change its certainty, you'll have to monitor communication. Now, that's the one thing where you can stick your foot in. You can get into that triangle in terms of communication, you got it. You change the communication of a PC, you're going to change his affinity, and you're going to change his reality. That's what you're trying to do. And of course, what your preclear is trying to do, basically, is not change. And so it becomes a little bit of a contest. Any case that is resistive is simply resisting effects, which is afraid to change. All right. When we go into this problem of ARC in terms of auditing, and the auditor doesn't hammer, pound away, and get the reaction for the case, he just might as well be home smoking a cigar, or down in the park, or riding on a swan, or almost anything. He isn't doing any good as an auditor. Now, he can use the most indifferent techniques intelligently. That is to say, let's equip an auditor now. Let's equip him with just three techniques. Let's give him formula H, reach and withdraw. And let's give him Q and A. See, these are pretty poor techniques simply because they do nothing but produce an effect, and they're very limited. They're quite limited as techniques. And then let's give him 10 minutes of nothing. Now, those three, by the way, would balance somewhat. And if you want to give him a fourth one, you give him hold the two back corners of the room. That's too good for him, though. We'll just say we just give him 10 minutes of nothing and Q&A and reach and withdraw. After fellows reach and withdrew for a while, well, we'd give him nothing for a while. And just vary him around. And that's all this auditor knows. Don't know anything else. All right? Well, that'd be a very limited assortment, wouldn't it? That very, very limited assortment. All right. One auditor sits down with these techniques, and he tells the fellow to reach and withdraw for present time. The fellow does it. I have present time, reach and withdraw for you, and you reach and withdraw for present time. Okay. Now, how's that? Your perception any better? And the guy says, I'm practically going blind. So the auditor says, well, all right, now reach and withdraw some more for present time. I have present time, reach and withdraw for you. And he does that a few more times. And he says to the fellow, well, how are you now? Well, I really am practically blind. I mean, I can't see a thing. And the auditor says, well, now let's reach and withdraw some more for present time. All right, let's get present time, reach and withdraw for you. And present time, reaching for you, present time, reaching for you, present time, withdrawing from you, present time, withdrawing from you. And then he'd vary it by saying, now get you reaching while present time withdraws. Now get present time reaching while you withdraw. Okay. And now, how's your perception now? Oh, it's just terrible. You know, I can't. Are people supposed to get this pain in their eyes? That's fine. Now get you reaching for present time and present time reaching for you. Same time. Now get you withdrawing from present time withdrawing from you. So forth. And now, how is it? How is it now? Oh, there's the most beautiful golden light standing just behind my head. Oh, there is. Well, now let's reach and withdraw to present time. Now let's get present time reaching and withdrawing from you. So forth. He goes on like this for another 3-4 minutes, and he says, well, how is it now? Well, I've popped into the light. It's blindingly white, and the world, I just can't see a thing but this beautiful light, but that's all I want to see. And he says, all right, let's reach and withdraw from present time, reach and withdraw. You, that's 3-4 minutes, and all of a sudden I says, is everything's gone black? The auditor says, okay. Let's reach for present time. Let's get present time reaching for you. Let's get present time withdrawing from you. You withdrawing from present time. And so forth. Now, how is it? Well, I don't know, the fellow says. What don't you know? Well, it isn't as black as it was, but gee, I feel kind of shaky. All right, well, let's reach for present time. Let's get present time reaching for you. He just go on using as long as he's getting a communication change. In other words. And then finally the fellow says, well, I'm seeing pretty fair. I'm seeing pretty fair now. And the auditor says, well, now let's reach for present time. Let's get present time reaching for you. You reaching for present time reaching for you. Now you withdrawing present time withdrawing from you. Present time reaching for you, present time withdrawing from you. You reaching for present time reaching for you. And how is it now? Oh, it's about the same. All right, let's get present time reaching for you and you reaching for present time. All right. And let's get you withdrawing present time withdrawing from you. Now, how is it now? Well, it's about the same. I mean, it's about the same. Okay. Now, let's get you reaching for present time and present time at the same time reaching for you. You got that? All right. Now, let's get you withdrawing present time withdrawing from you. You got that? All right. Now, let's get you making an effort to reach and withdraw from present time now. Now, how is it now? Oh, it was about the same, so forth. The auditor says, okay, now sit back in the chair. Sit back in the chair. And let's reach in all directions. 6 directions there. And just reach out for nothing. Just nothing in all directions. And he does that for a little while. All of a sudden, the preacher does that 2-3 minutes. And the auditor says, what's happening? Because I get an awful pain in my shoulder. That's fine. So just get nothing there. Nothing in all directions. It's fine. Now, how is it? This is real bad, you know. It feels like my shoulder's being cut off. Well, just all directions toward nothing. Don't pay any attention to the shoulder. Just concentrate on that nothingness. Just get a nothingness of the body and a nothingness of the shoulder and a nothingness of the ceiling and a nothingness of space and no earth. All right, let's see if we can get that. Fella does, sits there for 2 or 3 more minutes. The doctor says, all right, how is it now? Well, the pain in the shoulder's gone. All right, just get nothing in all directions. Fella says, what do you know? He says, I really am getting nothing in all directions. There's nobody here. Well, that's fine, that's fine. Let's get all directions toward nothing now. Now, you're getting behind you. I'm getting nothing behind you. No, I was kind of omitting that. Well, let's get nothing all the way behind you now. Let's get just nothing as far as you could go in all directions. There's just nothing. It says, ouch. So the doctor says, just remember, just behind you, too, and all around. Fellow sits there a couple more minutes. The doctor says, all right, how is it now? Well, I'm not getting any pains now. Well, how's your perception? What do you mean? Are you getting nothingness any better? Well, it's about the same. Oh, well, take it for another minute. Now, how is it? Oh, about the same. Well, fine.
This lecture is continued on side 2 of this cassette.
Let's get me sitting here asking you about perception and get that as a question. Now, turn it around on you as the answer. Okay, you got that? Fine. Now, let's get that again. Me as a question, turn around on you as the answer. All right. Now, get me here as position, question mark, and turn it around on you as position, exclamation point. All right, let's do that a few times. Now let's put position on you as an answer and turn it around on me as a question. You know, backwards track. You're making effect go to cause. Okay. I have to have done that for a while. Now, how's your perception now? No different. Should it be any different? Okay. Now, let's get me sitting here, blind as a bat. I'll turn that around on you as an answer. Now, perhaps you've done that a few times. Any perception change? No, nothing. Oh, is it supposed to do something? No, it didn't do anything. So on. All right, now let's get you reaching for present time. Here we go again. But all through this entire process, you've got nag, 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 nag. Just that. How's your perception? Any change? Of course, what's communication? Communication is a somatic. Communication is a field of light. Communication is a field of blackness. Communication is the how fast they speak. This is what communication is. And so you're getting changes in this. Okay. But if you as an auditor are willing to go 15 minutes without a marked communication change using the powerhouse of techniques that you're using, oh, boy, do you not want something not to happen. That indicts you for mopery and dopery on the high auditing bench. Just because, you see, you have a wealth of technique, is no reason you can sit there and neglect communication change. Something like saying this guy's got a billion bricks and he isn't even vaguely building a house with them. He's just got a billion bricks. And there's some other fellow, he's only got 50 bricks, but he's building something with them. It's better to have some guy with only 50 bricks than to have a guy with a billion bricks who just sits there. See? It isn't, quote, the intelligent use of techniques. You're shooting the moon too far from that. You can use patter that's as backwards as you ever heard of and still get there. It isn't the magic touch. It isn't the way you delicately hold your little pinky in the air as you ask the question. It isn't any of these things. It's just, did it change the communication level of your preclear? That's all. And if you sail along in, as I have been processing here the last, I don't know, By the way, the only case I've had any difficulty with for a long time was a person that I couldn't get to move around. The person was too lame to do any moving around and too heavy. And it was very, very difficult. And the case was very difficult simply because the most obvious technique had been bypassed. We were already down to that, down below that point. And it was kind of rough, kind of fish this one up a little bit. I got her up so that she had a greater stability and a better certainty. She was a little bit happier about life. Didn't break her all the way on through, on out, the way everything should have, mostly because it was just so doggone much time devoured in trying to get over the inability of, as far as mobility was concerned. That was the case's trouble, just the mobility. And you had to process like mad and get her up toward a point where she would even get the idea back, even vaguely get the idea back, of mobility itself. So you see that little entering wedge there. Now, there is a way where you could get around that, but you'd have to have a better equipped office than I have. You would put somebody in a wheelchair and have them roll themselves around to the points of the room. And if somebody was lying on his back or something on a one of those lie-down type of wheelchairs, you could move them around. But you'd just be fascinated with how much difference it'll make in a case. It'll make a big difference in a case. I remember one of the first times I ever used this, long time ago. I got the sawing away on this case. And boy, I was pulling all the tricks out of the bag, you know. And one after the other, they didn't work. Nothing was working. This case was... oh, just having a real rough time, and yet evidently fairly intelligent, but with a fairly long communication lag. You know, all right, now let's put up two terminals. How do you put them up? Where do you want me to put them? About that type of communication lag. And, I just used everything you could think of, just to try to bust that case out. And finally just broke down in a mauling the body around, which is what I call this technique to myself. Oh, you don't maul anybody around, you just move them around. You could also call it a close-order drill technique. It's how sergeants get so they can evaluate their troops to the point where the troops will go out and get shot, the damn fools. Anyway, just move the fellow around, move him around, move him around, move him around, move him around. And when I started moving this case around, after actually hours of work with every fancy technique there was and every plain one and every effective one, after hours of work, I used this mobility technique. I just moved them here and there, and then gave it back to them again. Now, I didn't use it for any 40 minutes. I used it for about 10 minutes on moving that person around the room, and then I used it for about 5 minutes on making himself move back around the room, and all of a sudden he broke into the first healthy laughter he had ever laughed. Heard him. Thought that was very funny. And his communication lag all the time he was doing this was coming up, and he was beginning to walk faster. And he was walking less hectically and walking faster, walking with more competence. And we're just making him put a point in conjunction with other points. One, namely, a body, put in conjunction with other bodies. And I then sat him down. Up to that time, he had... you know, exteriorized without much perception and not quite sure he was there. That's where he was hung up, you know, and I couldn't seem to change that state of beingness until I just made him drill all around the room. Well, what brings this to mind is I did it again last night as a demonstration of this auditor came to see me late last night. And with a case that was sitting right there. I didn't know it until after I'd processed this case. This case had gone through a rough time since the last time I had touched it. Had real big upsets. So when I started to process the case, the comm lag was large. It was very wide. And zing! Down it came right away, but it didn't come down. This was repeat performance. It didn't come down on the other techniques I was using on the case to show this auditor. It didn't speed up, in other words, till I made the case walk around the room. And then halfway through the time when I was making a walk around the room, if you say just one more order, just one more order, I'll scream, words to that effect. It's one thing I can never stand. You realize I'm about to leave. One more order. And I did some Q&A, or words to that effect, a little match terminal, on the people who gave this person orders. You know, papa, mama, teacher, something like that. Just marked them up and threw them away, and marked them up and threw them away, and marked them up and threw them away, and then marked them up and made her move them in mock-up, and so forth, and then went on with the process. And communication lag went right up, and person brightened up quite markedly. But this technique had evidently conquered, to some slight degree, upsets which have evidently been accumulating over a period of a number of days. Very violent upsets, the kind that you look back and find the E-meter stuck on. Evidently pulled this case right out of it. But that was just, I had no intentions of doing this with this technique. Now, that's about, I would say, about the 25th or 30th time, I don't know quite how many it is, that I have seen this process break into a rough case. And as I said, the only case I am told with is one that I couldn't get into mobility. Now, there's possibly some gradient scale technique whereby you can get a person who is relatively immobile and get them to move parts of the body or something like that, or move their hands around or do something on that order which would break up into it. But I haven't, as a matter of fact, studied that level of case that is immobile enough to tell you for sure whether or not it would have any great effect, but it's something for you to remember if you run up against a problem. I have processed, for instance, deaf people, processed them with a slip of paper, writing the commands. I have processed a person who was deaf and blind, and that was very interesting because to get the whole process of what we were doing across, it was necessary for the material that I was using to be brailled. The person could read braille. And got a braille typewriter and knocked it out on braille and established a wrist tap code with the individual and just established two very, very minor techniques and got those very clearly understood and then had all the signals on them understood and rehearsed the signals a little while against the textbook, and then we went into processing on the thing, and the person regained hearing in one ear in about an hour. So we just could throw the whole thing away. It was a case that had not been deaf from birth, so language was still there. This is a case of a soldier, by the way, caught in a shell blast. Classic case of hysterical blindness and hysterical deafness, and had been labeled as organic blindness and deafness because there's part of the optic nerve actually destroyed, and there's the eardrums have been burst, and the scar tissue will not, so on, and they just laid it in with a club, this person's. So that's the way that one went. But anyway, now, when we get into tough problems of processing, generally our own ingenuity can get us out of them, because the problem which presents itself is simply a problem in communication. It always, always is a problem in communication. The difficulty you have is a problem in communication. All right? Now, right here, in trying to train you in these techniques, I have a problem in communication. You see that? Many of the experience which you have had in life have directed your interest or your attention and so forth in one direction or another and given you a certainty, a good or bad certainty on some point in existence. And you maybe had some tremendous experience one time, whether it was a love affair or immediately following a nitrous oxide operation or Sudden recovery when you were young of the use of some limb or something, and it was a tremendous, exhilarating experience. And you may be valuing everything I say as a means and route of getting back to such an experience. You may be retransposing material, you see, and all the time you're up against the horrible fact, which could make you, if you didn't recognize some of these points and you weren't right on this level, it could make you, some of you, intensely antagonistic toward me. Just the fact that I am telling you things that you really should know, since the mechanics of life are natively known to you, that I am telling you these things would occur to you possibly as a hammer and pound on you don't know. So the fact that I am trying to communicate this material to you might stir up the fact that you have a low level of knowingness. You might think of this, so on, whereas this is not the case at all. All this is an invitation to a higher level of knowingness, which is, let's put in this training as a possibility of making a lot of people well, and in yourself, let's use it as a substitute up to the time when you yourself have recovered that level of knowingness. And one of these days, you'll throw all this away. I hope so. But it's a leg up. It's very hard, for instance, to get out of a tide race sometimes unless somebody throws you a life preserver. And yet, quite unreasonably, I have seen men fished out of the drink one way or the other and have seen them curse their rescuers. The fact they had to be rescued came at them as a direct insult to their power and pride. I have seen a rescuer very nonplussed by this. He expects to be thanked, you know. So, so you see, here we have a communication problem. And this is a problem simply of rephrasing the material of life itself and of knowingness itself this way and that, and trying to code it for you this way and that, so that it becomes useful to you and useful to others because they know you or because you process them. Now, in the problem of communication, some of your work has been done for you in the problem of trying to communicate to a preclear what you're trying to do. This is one you mustn't overlook. We get back on communication again, because you have two problems of communication. And don't you ever overlook this problem again, not anybody present, please, because I'm so tired of preclears that you're processing right now, coming to me and saying, and so on 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 and so on, and this was wrong and that was wrong and so on. In no time did they have a legitimate complaint except about one thing. The auditor didn't ask for the communication changes. That's the only complaint, really, that they had is a legitimate complaint. And if the technique you're using isn't giving a communication change to the preclear, better or worse, why, you're just not getting any place. And if it's getting too worse, and you've decided that it's not going to break on this technique because it's getting too worse slowly. By the way, getting too much worse slowly is a bad one. They just kind of plow in on a down curve. And when that starts happening, let me give you one little tip on that that may save your bacon for you someday on preclear. When they get too worse slowly and they're chugging in harder and harder into it, it may only be that you're neglecting one side of a bracket. I mean, just as little as that, as far as the technique itself is concerned. But certainly, you are neglecting the physical endurance factor of the preclear. You have exceeded it somewhere along the line. Although a preclear can sure stand an awful lot, and so on, if they keep on getting consistently worse over a period of about a half an hour, and the technique you're using isn't making them any better, you go on and get your communication changes, you better slide off into something else. Don't keep making them charge up against the unwillingness, because eventually the preclear identifies you with what the preclear is trying to fight. And when that happens, you're no good to them as an auditor. I have, by the way, seen somebody process a preclear at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, just insisting the preclear go on through that particular charge, and the preclear more and more unwilling, and the preclear red-eyed and groggy and very upset and getting more and more tired, and so on, finally refuse and spitefully kick the auditor out on a line. That's very stupid auditing. Believe me, that's real stupid. Remember the conditions I told you under which people had bad things happen to them? Well, one of them is auditing them late at night, and another is auditing them when they're too tired. Well, an individual doesn't necessarily get too tired when they're being audited, but they can get beyond the point of their ability to endure. Body too badly kicked around. You see, there's some very, very harsh, hard techniques that you can use on a preacher, and if you kept up with one of them too long, you just wear him out. Not likely to happen with 8C, but it can happen. One of the lighter techniques of 8C, by the way, produced a condition of weariness in a preacher, mostly because it was repetition without a communication change. Preacher merely got bored. Real bored. How bored can you get? Agony. That's how bored you can get. Agony. Agony is the deep emotion of boredom. Boredom, in essence, is the warning signal that agony is on its way. Boredom is not just not doing anything. Boredom is an eddying back and forth, which on its lower harmonic becomes pain, and on a lower harmonic becomes agony. Pain is a misposition and an idling around, an eddying of attention units. And that you get down below 2-5, and 2-5, they're just eddying. And then as it gets more solid, why, it becomes pain. People who are afraid of pain are afraid of being bored. When you start to bore somebody and so on, you've got a problem with fear of pain on your hands. Lots of ways to do it. If you start to bore somebody, it's an interesting thing that you can just turn around and waste pain in brackets and you snap them right out of it. Pain, boredom. Pain, the lower harmonic of boredom. Boredom's the upper harmonic of pain. Pain is at just half of boredom on the tone scale. Yeah. There are several lower harmonics, and the rougher harmonics are way down. Now, part of your work at communication as an auditor has been done for you. It's been done for you to the degree that there exists some relatively simple statements of Scientology. And it is not your role, particularly, to train a preclear, merely because you're processing the preclear. The preclear keeps insisting that they want to know more about it and so forth and what you're doing. Well, there are several things that you can do. I am presently at work on an information for preclear pamphlet, which will probably be available the time anybody else hears this tape. But there are several things. One of the best things you can do for them is to give them a work which they can use to exercise themselves, or turn around and do what you're doing on a minor scale. You'll find out that this will be very intriguing to a preclear if he hasn't had very many interests in life, and he sees that you're doing something for him, and he wants to turn around and do something for somebody else. Well, you have a route to do that. That's why self-analysis in Scientology stays in the run. Now, to date, self-analysis in Scientology has sold in excess of 28,000 copies, and it's still going up. And by the way, the book has never been sold. I mean, nothing ever happened to this book except it just sits there. But what it was, let me tell you about this little book. What it was a statement in the reference of people who were not technically informed. I produced the text of this book by having it read by several people who did not have high school educations, and found out from them what they didn't understand in the text. and then each time shifted the text till they did understand it, and then had somebody else read it. And I had several people do that, and I finally got back what is in the early part of the book here, a statement of getting to know oneself and the problem of consciousness and unconsciousness, and all is just a statement of survival. And the less conscious you are, the less aware you are, so the worse you see, and great simplicity. And it goes on with its simplicity. But more than that, it gives them exercises they can employ on themselves. Now, originally, this book was written as recalls and was shifted off into mock-ups. It was shifted off at the time it was being published, the British edition. And as a result, two or three places in the book that don't quite jibe to imagine a scene about. But that's all right. In later editions, this is corrected. Earlier editions aren't. Well, anyway, a person can take this and he can have a lot of fun with it from the basis of life and behavior. He's got this chart here, and this chart will tell him a lot of things if he wants to figure those things out. But you get how elementarily simple this book is, at the same time appearing to be rather technical. But it's real simple. Once in a while, somebody will come to me. Oh, I love this little trap. I lay this trap for him. Somebody come to me when somebody says this, I really have a backfire on it. And he says, well, I don't know, that book of yourself, now it's very, very complicated and so forth. And so I say, yes. How did you like the dissertation on the likening of life to horticulture in the second chapter? And, likening it to flowers and so forth, and how we learn from plant life about how we ourselves live. How did you like that in the second chapter? Well, they say, that was all right. I understood that all right. But there's some other portion. I'll say, well, why don't you go read the book? That is of the essence, because there is no such chapter on horticulture. Now, you'll find that when the book has been misunderstood, it just hasn't been read. But instead of you burning up a tremendous amount of processing time trying to instruct somebody, you'd better give them an elementary statement which they can maunder over, and some exercises which they can do, because they're always asking you, now what can I do between now and the next session, something like that. Well, if you've got a book, self-analysis, you say, well, between now and the next session, why, you do, and you must be very specific about this, very, very specific. You could look at this book very carefully, and you say, all right, now, you read from page 13 to page 15, and you do the exercises between page 66 and 69. And be sure you do all of those. And they'll be real happy. And it'll do them a lot of good. A theatrical troupe once took this book, and in the interest of becoming a better theatrical troupe, they simply took this book, and they sat down around backstage in the morning after rehearsal. This sounds incredible to you, but they slugged it for 2 hours a day. 2 hours a day. Now, there was one case of the group that was strictly what head. Couldn't get out, resistive 5, had been processed, and without success on very early techniques. And they did it for 3 months. Sounds horrible, doesn't it? But 3 months they got to that. At the end of that time, it never occurred to anybody to say this fellow, because he was a famous case, you see. Never occurred to anybody to give him any further processing. Well, he told him one day, a friend of his said to him, well, let's give you a session. He starts in routinely with no hope at all. He says, be 3 feet back of your head. The fellow was perception. He had just gone there on this book. So your homework on the pre-clear at this level won't get you in any trouble beyond this. Some somatic is liable to turn on, and it frightens him, and he doesn't keep on long enough to run it out. If he just ran two or three more mock-ups, believe me, he'd run it out. Now, let me tell you something about you as an auditor. Any time some case is really baffling you, you just steady it down. You take a copy of self-analysis, and you give the case the next to the last list in self-analysis, right over here, where it says, remember something real. And that's the second list, or the next, the bottom list on page 145. Recall a time which really seems real to you, and so forth. It's continued over here on page 146. And you're just starting the case right there. Then you go back over here to an early session, like on page 66, 67, and you just start in on the pre-clear. And look, I'll guarantee you something. I'll absolutely guarantee this will happen. That in that short space of time, within an hour's processing, your case will be flying straight, flying level. If you think you some cases loused up beyond anything ever redeeming it, so forth, just do that. You've got a security in this book, and that's been tested over and over and over. I don't think that an auditor realizes that fact because maybe he himself is not such a tough case. Maybe his values about existence are not as upsetting as the pre-clears. I'll tell you one thing about it that is quite interesting. I myself have taken this advice about five times. And each time I found that I had been overshooting the case. And the case suddenly relaxed and got good communication changes and snapped into it and took some responsibility in existence and so forth. In other words, I wasn't given the case any kind of processing that equaled that processing. The reason that book is there is because it will hit the upper range psycho, the lower range neurotic. It'll hit the kid. It'll keep kids going, so on.